Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion advised.
The policeman told me she might be a danger to me, but she'll be locked up for a while now, and if the smallest thing happens, I can just call 911. Like that'll save me from my ex-best friend with psychopathic tendencies and a violent past.
I'll have these scars forever, but most of them have healed or faded. I 100% believe that if I had stayed, I'd be 6 feet under.
From Killer Podcasts, true tales of horror, bizarre happenings, unexplainable events. This is Disturbed. Hello, and welcome back to the show. We've seen the comments, heard the feedback, so this week we're bringing you 4 true stories of close calls with violent intentions, real people, and real situations that will give you the creeps. So sit back, listen closely, and dive into the horror. First, a story narrated by Kat Carter, from Reddit user Seal of Disapproval. I unknowingly went on a date with a murderer.
Okay, where to begin? So, I use dating sites, you know, hoping to find a decent person to go out with and make a connection. One particular dating site, sadly, you know, has a lot of duds and very, very few decent folks. However, I remained optimistic and kept going back to check my messages every so often. After a few weeks, I received a message from a normal-looking guy who seemed to have a lot of good things going for him. After a bit of chatting, I felt really comfortable giving him my personal phone number. It's something I rarely ever do. We talked on the phone and found we had many things in common. Both of us were nerdy and had some form of collection of nerdy things. And at that point, I was really feeling it. I wanted to meet him in person. So we set up a day to go out for some brunch at a local restaurant. He told me he was excited to meet me, and I told him that I was excited too. On the day of the date, we had a lovely brunch and talked about all sorts of things. He was an extremely tall guy and built like an ox. It was almost a little intimidating, but to be fair, I do like me some tall guys, so that didn't bother me much. After some time talking, he got a text from his mom asking him, you know, where he was and that she needed him to come help her with his dad. He told me after the conversation with his mom that his dad wasn't doing well and was basically in hospice care at home. So I gave my condolences and said it would be fine to cut the date short so he could go take care of his dad. And I even told him I'd like to see him again sometime soon when he was able to. And you know, he said he felt the same. As we left the restaurant, he walked me to my car in the nearby lot. We ended up stopping for a short time and conversing just a little longer. I thought everything was going great, but all of a sudden, he asked me if I wanted to feel him. I was so taken aback by what he had said that I asked him what he meant. I looked around the parking lot nervously just to see if there was anybody nearby that I could flag down for help. Sadly, there was no one, so my attention turned back to him. He was waiting there expectantly for me to touch him, like afraid of what he might do if I refused. I shakily reached my hand and tried to aim not directly upon his crotch. Then I lied. Oh yeah, haha, sure, can feel it. You know, just laughing nervously. He didn't either catch my hesitation or just ignored it, because then he forcefully grabbed my hand and brought it to his groin. Thankfully, I still didn't feel it, as I still tried to avoid the area. He asked me if I felt it now, and I lied once again and said, yeah, I feel it. I was so afraid and was at a loss for words. He towered over me like a skyscraper. You know, if he wanted to, he could have easily lifted me up, put a hand over my mouth, and shoved me into his car without breaking a sweat. To cut the awkward silence, I said, well, I better go now. And he said goodbye and left to go to his car. I torpedoed to my own car and locked the doors immediately. My hand shook as I gripped the steering wheel and headed home. I glanced into my rearview mirror to make sure he wasn't following me. When I got home, I felt so gross that I washed my hands thoroughly, even though I didn't actually touch him. Just the thought of it made me sick. After that day, I never texted him back or answered his phone calls. Obviously, you know, he was a total creep. Now, I knew what his name was, and he had mentioned what his dad's name was. So I did some digging, and I was able to discover his middle name and last name as well. I couldn't help myself, so I used one of those background report sites to look up any sort of criminal information that I could obtain about him. I needed to know everything. The first thing I saw with his full name was an article about a woman whose body was found on the side of the highway in a large bag. As I read the article, my jaw dropped when I saw his name. Later in the article, after reading what he had done to the woman, there was a portion in which the journalist interviewed his parents. The dad's nickname came up, the same name he himself had told me. To seal the deal, his age matched up too. Like, this was the same guy I had gone on a date with. He went to prison for less than 10 years. He had only gotten out of prison like a month before he started talking to me on this dating site. It all just hit me like a ton of bricks. I just went on a date with a man who killed a woman. Of course, he had never told me any of this. Had I known beforehand, I never, ever would have gone on a date with him or given him my personal phone number. Since then, I hope he has not searched for my address. Suffice it to say, I have been very uneasy for months since discovering his true nature.
Our next story is told by Daniel DeGrow about how you can never be too careful when your gut tells you something isn't quite right.
I've lived in a small town all my life. This story takes place decades ago during my first year of high school. Back then, everybody in the town was well acquainted and watched out for each other. If someone didn't know you, they at least knew some of your family members. Everyone young and old in this small town agreed on this. If someone is an outsider, everyone else is on high alert. I'd seen a few newcomers in our little town. I would hear everyone trying to figure out who they were. The adults would tell us teens and kids to be careful and watch our backs, and my sister and I did because of it. We stayed at home and never left without our mom or stepdad in tow. They made sure of it. One day, some new people moved in across the street from our place. We didn't really care. We stayed in the house 90% of the time, unless it was to get groceries or run other errands. No one in our town knew these people, so quite a few people were on high alert, and they had the right to be. Back then, it was safe to go out at night and older people could sit on their porches without worry. One evening, around 6 p.m., we drove to the store for snacks and some frozen pizzas to eat since no one felt like cooking. I always keep an eye on my surroundings, and tonight was no different. As we were returning home, I saw a man wearing dark blue jeans and a black t-shirt messing with our apartment door. I interrupted my sister and mother's conversation saying, "Why is that dude at our door?" My mother looked and saw him in the glare of our car's headlights. There were barely any other lights on in the rest of the street. We then noticed that a second man was leaning against the wall close to the breezeway, watching. "Let's go ahead and get out while the man is right there," my mom said, grabbing her weapon. She told my sister and I to stay close to her. It was then that the second guy started walking towards the middle of the road, looking anxious as he shoved his hands into his pants pocket. I tried to look at his face, but he kept it turned away from us, looking around the apartment complex as if he was looking for someone. When we got to our complex's breezeway, I saw the first guy hurrying from around the building to head back across the street. I didn't say anything until we got into the house. Turns out, the second guy was on lookout, and upon noticing our car returning, he tried to warn his friend who was at our door. We locked up and made sure everything was still in place before my mom told me to barricade the door. We'd been doing that for some time, and I'll admit, I had some nights where I didn't because I was super tired or sore from gym class, working out with weights and such. That night, I did it immediately. And over the next few days, nothing happened. A week or so passed, and each night I barricaded the door without question. Then one night, I came home from working out and was sore all over. My mom firmly told me to barricade the door, since I was stronger than her and my sister. My stepdad was at work, so it was up to me. I admit, I lazed around till about 9:30 or 10 p.m. before reluctantly doing it and then heading to bed. The next morning, we did our normal routine and were heading out to go to school. My mom was locking the door as usual when I heard her exclaim, "What the hell?" I turned around to see her struggling with the lock, which was completely loose. She fiddled with it, trying to put the lock back into place, but nothing worked and she was getting frustrated. It was clear someone had taken our doorknob off. When they were unable to enter due to my barricade, they gave up and tried to fix it to make it seem like nothing was wrong. My mom tried to fix the doorknob, but eventually gave up and took me to school despite my protests. We were all worried and anxious. I mean, our doorknob was loose. Anyone could walk in. My mom picked up my stepdad from work, told him what was going on, and the maintenance man came to fix the door later that day. Then, everyone in the complex got their locks fixed and new deadbolts installed. No one was happy, but the manager didn't care. I heard through the grapevine that a resident in Complex D had abruptly moved. Some days later, we learned that someone reported this woman for having two guys living with her who were not on her lease. These men were known criminals and had passed arrests on their records for break-ins. No one knew where she and the guys went. They just up and left. Over dinner, while my sister washed dishes, my stepdad was talking about everything to a close friend who worked on the police force. After the call, he and Mom talked and he said, "What if those guys were the ones trying to break in? And that's why the lock was broken." We all stayed silent. I looked at my mom, who looked from me to my dad, as we silently let the pieces fall into place. I felt dread in my bones. If I never forced myself to barricade the door that night and just went straight to bed, where would my sister, my mom, and I be now?
You're listening to Disturbed. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
My name is Bill Huffman, and I am a former Cleveland news producer, and I am now the host of the podcast, Who Killed? I began the show focusing on the unsolved murder of Amy Mihaljevic, and now each week I explore a different case with a focus on some of the victims who don't get the attention they deserve. I have a deep catalog of over 225 episodes, so there is a guarantee there will be something for you. Who Killed is an evergreen podcast, Killer Podcasts, and Slow Burn Media production. Subscribe today wherever you get your favorite shows.
Welcome back to the podcast. Our next story is a haunting reminder to keep people at arm's length. That way, when you see who they really are, they can't ruin your whole life. Narrated by Tara Ash.
A few months ago, I was in the youth psych ward due to my depression spiraling out of control. It wasn't an easy time in my life. While I was in the ward, though, I met a girl who would always listen and be super nice to me. There weren't a lot of people I could talk to, but she seemed to be a good friend. That being said, the things she would share with me about herself were very unsettling. She said she had abused animals in her childhood, was able to turn her empathy off, and wanted to kill her parents. I was bored and suicidal, so I was thrilled by this unique friendship. I thought nothing of the potential risk since we were locked in anyway. I got better, though, and left the hospital. Soon after my release, she successfully contested her court order and was discharged too, against medical advice. We had swapped numbers in the ward, so she reached out after her release. We began texting semi-frequently, and I realized that I was the only person she could confide in. I really did feel bad for her. She would tell me about how bad she was doing and about her suicidal thoughts. Then, randomly one day, she left me a voicemail while I was at school. I sat in my car and listened as she told me she was planning a whole rampage to kill all the people who had wronged her. I was in complete shock. I went to the police, who, after questioning me, went to pay her a visit. They called me later that night and said they didn't think she was a danger at all and was probably just angry when she said all those terrible things. Naturally, she assumed that it was me who had betrayed her, but I tried my best to convince her it had probably been my parents who had checked my phone and reported it. She at least pretended to believe me. All that happened a couple weeks ago, and everything seemed like it was back to normal. Earlier today, I checked my phone between classes and noticed she had sent me a photo. No words, no context, nothing. When I clicked it, my jaw dropped. It showed her posing with bloody hands and face and a lighter in her hand and a burning stove in the background. I, of course, concluded the worst and called the police right away. They asked me to come back in for questioning, and they told me they already knew about it. She had caused a decent-sized fire in an apartment block and smashed some windows after a fight with her parents. Fortunately, no one besides her was hurt. They thanked me for providing them with further proof and told me she would probably go back to the psych ward. When I left the police interview room, I honestly couldn't believe my eyes. She was sitting there, right in front of me, on a bench in the hallway looking at the floor. Our eyes met and I just stood there in shock. Her face looked the same, and after a moment, I quickly walked away. I feel like I'm in deep trouble. Eventually, she'll be released again, and now there's no denying that I snitched on her. I have no trust in the judicial system anymore. The policeman told me she might be a danger to me, but she'll be locked up for a while now, and if the smallest thing happens, I can just call 911. Like that'll save me from my ex-best friend with psychopathic tendencies and a violent past. This is your sign to not stay in touch with a suspect psych ward friend, because that story might not end well. I hope mine does.
Our final story is narrated by Michaela Ray from r/letsnotmeet about a relationship so bad it almost ended her life.
I was just a sophomore in high school when I fell head over heels for the new quiet kid and thought he was my forever. It sounds crazy now, but I went on to marry him just 1 week after graduation. High school sweethearts. Looking back now, I can see how many red flags I noticed but ignored because I was young and eagerly wanted to be a grown-up. The night before my wedding day, I was going over last-minute wedding details with my mom, who is easily one of the most caring and selfless people I know. Bless my sweet mama's heart. When I asked her if she'd be mad if I decided not to go through with the wedding. Me being me, Mom thought I was messing with her. I couldn't bring myself to tell her the truth of what was going on. So I took a deep breath and forced a believable chuckle. She genuinely thought I was just pulling another one of my jokes. I went on to finally tell her the truth almost a year after I escaped him. She still feels bad for not taking me seriously at the time, but no one knew what was going on behind closed doors. Makes sense. I was honestly doing the most PR for him. Only 2 hours after saying I do, he was throwing me out of his truck in my parents' driveway, cussing and yelling that he wanted a divorce, and then recklessly driving off. So much for the honeymoon phase. I ran inside and my dad came out of the bedroom. He couldn't understand a word I was saying. He asked me what was happening, and I explained as clearly as I could while uncontrollably sobbing. He left me. How could he on our honeymoon? My dad was pissed, but then relaxed and tried to rationalize the situation. Maybe he forgot something or was pulling a bad joke or something like that. Then we saw my new husband's truck flying into our driveway. My dad smiled and said, "See, he's right there." I wiped my tears and walked out the door and told my parents, yes, it was a prank. Inside, I was screaming. I was so embarrassed because I felt like I looked crazy, but if I wanted to save this relationship, they could never know the truth. Months went by, and he left to train for the military. He started being sweeter while we were long distance. But before long, training was complete, and I packed up my life to move to Texas with him. I could tell my parents were starting to see the cracks. I had worked so hard to glue together. My mom even picked up my phone on the table, mistaking it for hers, and saw this huge message from him. She just started crying, begging me not to move away because he was not a good person. But I lied and assured her that this was way out of character for him and that he was just lonely. I knew she didn't believe me, but she also knew I was stubborn and was going to do whatever I put my mind to, regardless of her concerns. After just a few weeks in Texas, I knew my life was in danger. It was Thanksgiving Day, and my family called to check up on us and just tell us Happy Thanksgiving. The moment I hung up, the man I thought was my soulmate started cussing at me and saying that I needed to stop talking to my family because he was my family now. I let out a little chuckle, thinking, he's got to be joking. And he picked up the wedding glasses I had made specifically for us and threw them directly at me. They crashed to the ground, shattering around me. Shocked, I didn't know what to do. So I picked up a broom and started sweeping up the broken glass. But his tantrum wasn't over. He then threw picture frames at me while I was sweeping up the glass. Honestly, that broken glass on the wood floor was just a metaphor for any love I had left for this man. I broke that night. I stopped seeing him as my other half, and more as the monster I was now stuck with. I became very depressed, and he loved that. He would break me down over and over again just to get a reaction. 2 months went by, and one night he completely lost his shit over some issue with the washer and dryer. The repair people had messed up which date they were supposed to come fix them. He started pacing back and forth, mumbling words I couldn't quite make out. Then he demanded that I call and fix the problem. He grabbed me and sat me on the couch, telling me what to say and that I better not fuck it up, as if this was a damn negotiation. This man was paranoid as fuck, making comments that the repair company was doing this to him because he was a soldier. Then he started blaming me, even though I wasn't even around him when he called in the first place. He yelled at me for hours until, snap, he stopped and walked to the bedroom. Meanwhile, I was on the couch still processing that fucking moment. I replayed what he had said to me in my head. You're so fucking stupid. This is your fault. Did you plan this with the workers just to make me look dumb? Or are you really just that fucking dumb? Huh? You fucking bitch? Yeah, that's what I fucking thought, you fucking no good, ungrateful bitch. I just said, you know what? I'm done. You won't do anything except complain and bitch at me, blaming me for everything. All you do is cuss and yell at me for no damn reason. Then he looked at me with this look that I've heard other victims try to describe. The best I can describe it is a darkness in his eyes, like an emptiness. It still causes me nightmares to this day. Without hesitation, he lunged at me in the middle of the day with our curtains open, door wide open, neighbors out and about. He threw me against the wall and started choking me until I slowly saw black. He let go only for a second. Then he slammed my entire body to the floor. At that moment, I either blacked out or my brain was trying to shield me from what was happening. Slowly, I came to, and he was holding me by my shoulders and just repeatedly slamming me on the wood floor. My screams were ignored by the people outside. I pleaded for anyone to call the police and yelled for help over and over. My fight or flight took over and chose flight. I ran to the main bathroom and locked the door. I frantically called my mom. In that moment, I just wanted to hear her voice because I was unsure if it would be my last. My poor mom didn't know the nightmare of that phone call until it was too late. She was with my sister and dad, and she put me on speakerphone so they could all talk to me. Instead, they heard me screaming for my life and heard my ex calling me awful names and telling me to get my ass out of there and to unlock the door. They were confused. My dad was ready to come kill this asshole himself. But then silence. No more banging on the door. Just me softly crying and trying to calm my mother over the phone. I told her I was all right and that I knew I needed to leave him, but that I had to do it in the safest way possible. I knew that if he were to catch me, I may not make it out with my life. When I walked out of the room, my ex was just sitting there with a blank stare, like nothing had happened. This was a theme throughout our 3-year relationship, but I could no longer ignore the escalation of his behavior. One night, I put my escape plan into action. I was gonna make a run for it. It was 2 a.m. The keys to my Pontiac were on the kitchen table, and he was asleep in the bedroom that I wasn't allowed in several days earlier. I busted out of the guest bedroom that was my prison and beelined out the front door as quickly and quietly as possible. I drove 9.5 hours to my home state, only stopping once in Dallas to fill up on gas. With every mile in my rearview mirror, I felt something inside that reassured me. I'm free now. I'll have these scars forever, but most of them have healed or faded. I 100% believe that if I had stayed, I'd be 6 feet under. So, to my abusive ex-husband that I fled from that late February night, let's not meet again. Ever.
Want more Disturbed? Check out our Patreon for member-exclusive content, early merch access, and other cool perks. I'm your host, Doug Bailey, and this has been Disturbed, a production of Killer Podcasts and part of the Evergreen Network. For more paranormal and true crime shows, visit killerpodcasts.com. Follow our social channels at Disturbed Podcast on Instagram or Disturbed_pod on Twitter. If you enjoyed the show, please consider subscribing and reviewing on your favorite listening platform. Share your own true horror story at DisturbedPodcast.com. Music by Epidemic Sound and by Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Our producers are Noah Fouts and Elizabeth Flood. Our audio engineer is Nathan Corson. Executive producers Bridget Coyne and Gerardo Orlando. Until next time, stay safe out there.
You You might be surprised to know that not all serial killers are straight, cisgender white men. And the victims of true crime are not a monolith either. She's Wendy and I'm Beth, and together we host Fruit Loop's Serial Killers of Color, a true crime podcast.
Together we take deep dives into the true crime stories about marginalized and minoritized perps and victims that often go untold.
We also provide the context and nuance that these stories deserve. At Fruit Loops, we're serving up true crime with a side of history, society, culture, and some fun.
Listen to Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.